Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Thank you for tuning in to the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Please subscribe to our weekly Boston Bruins Hockey Talk on listening platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify Podcasts. We'd certainly appreciate it if you give our show a 5-star rating along with a written review. You can also subscribe to our official YouTube channel for a video version of our weekly program. If you'd like to support our show financially, please go to our blackandgoldhockey.com website and click on our affiliated Fanatics banner before shopping online. Another way to financially support our weekly program is to become a Patreon member to be eligible for weekly Boston hockey prizes and monthly Boston Bruins hand-signed jersey giveaways. Please go to patreon.com/blackandgoldhockeypodcast and donate just $1 per episode. Many thanks for the continued support and enjoy the show. What's up, Bruins fans? This episode 330 of the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. Sign up now at FanDuel.com/Boston because new customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. Get on that. It really helps us out. Don't forget that code, that URL, FanDuel.com/Boston. Like I said, it helps us out. But we use FanDuel all the time as our exclusive gambling partner, if you could say. But regardless of that, we do have an episode that we got to get done, and it is Sunday, and you know it's this start of a long ass off season. But unfortunately, we do not have Steve with us today because he's got family commitments. It is Mother's Day, so happy Mother's Day to all the amazing mothers out there. This episode 330 is dedicated to all of you listeners, viewers, and moms everywhere. So without further ado, I do want to introduce or bring back my guest, Grace Roberts. Grace, how are you and how was your week?
It was good. I was visiting my family up in Maine, so I was happy to be back in New England for a little bit. I'm coming to you from a beautiful hotel room in Savannah, Georgia. It's great to be all over the place, but other than that, nice week back at home. Love being in Maine, so can't complain. How about you?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a good week. The weather was kind of up and down. It's a beautiful day today here in New England. But outdoor activities are going to start happening. Start doing some live streams outside, having some cocktails on the deck, you know, getting some content out. So I'm looking forward to that. We tried to open up a new brew pub here in Amesbury where I live, and it's called The Outrider, and they're from out west. And they opened up a new place in Amesbury, and we were fortunate enough to go in the front door and walk right out the back. Because there was not an inch of space. I'm serious.
Really?
I mean, there was so many people there for the grand opening on Friday. So we went to a bar next door called Sky High and had some drinks there, and then we went and had some Mexican at Hoppy's Cantina. right downtown Amesbury. So it was nice. It was a day. It was an awesome day, regardless of me getting to Outrider. I will get there sometime this week to try it out and get some food and get some of the local brews in me. But other than that, it's just been really calm and relaxed around here. You know, typical off season when you're not in the playoffs anymore. But you know, that we have a Discord server, and I will definitely put the link in the show notes. So please join us to help us create content and every week throughout this off season, but also get involved in the conversation and pass the off season as fast as possible. We have a great crew of people over there. And obviously, like I said, I'll put the show notes in there. And we also do want to get you guys more involved in the program during the off season. If you have trade ideas, you want to fire somebody. There's so much. If you could do it respectfully, please give us a call at our Black and Gold Hockey Podcast listener hotline. It's open 24/7 and accept calls from Bruins fans all over the world. So hit us up at 978-504-2727 and leave a brief Bruins-related voicemail to get involved. Or by tweet at us, too, your questions, and we'll answer them on the show. But use that hashtag, AskBNG. All right. All that jazz, blah, blah, blah. I do want to say, because it's Mother's Day, I do want to give a shout-out to somebody. Obviously, my mom, Kathy. Hopefully, she's well. But I do want to mention a former Black and Gold Productions writer. She was a short time here, but she's leaving Nesson and going to Mass Live. So I want to give a shout out to Lauren Campbell. Lauren is one of my favorite Bruins writers, and she does a tremendous job. She was at Nesson for 5 years, and obviously, you know, things she had to part ways and moving on to hopefully better, better opportunities for herself. So. Shout out to Lauren. She's always been a good friend and just a solid Bruins fan all around. All right, so here we go. Recent news, the Boston Bruins signed defensive prospect Mason Lowry to a 2-year entry-level contract. And at the NHL level, that is going to be worth a $925K, the 2020 second-round pick. He has most recently played his first pro games with the Providence Bruins down the American Hockey League. And, you know, so for those first couple of contests, I'm not sure if you got to see any of it, Grace, because I know you're very, very busy in this spring. But I thought he showed a lot of confidence for a young man transitioning from the NCAA game into the, you know, first years of pro. But, you know, this is also a player that could be aggressively moved up because of what Don Sweeney has been saying in his press conference that him and management and ownership did earlier last week. And we're going to have a bunch of videos and audio of clips of that press conference so we could talk about. But he said that they're going to integrate a lot. They could be a different roster, and we're going to integrate a lot of youth maybe. So obviously with the cap constraints, that could aggressively move some of these young prospects up because their AAV is going to be that much lower. So what are your thoughts on getting Mason involved in a 2-year entry-level contract? But also, do you feel his game is ready for the NHL as close as next season or possibly a year away?
I think that I watched more of him back when he was at Ohio State, which go blue. So sorry to the Buckeyes. Glad that he's now on our side of the being a Bruins player. I saw more of him when he was playing at the NCAA during his first 2 years there. And honestly, I think that one of the things that helps his case for being able to move up more readily is just his size. He's a big kid. He's 6'4", weighs like 210. So you're kind of looking at a Derek Forbert size. Obviously, he's not doesn't have the experience necessarily. But I mean, you look at him compared to some of the smaller guys that either are still growing because they're in college and they maybe didn't do juniors or for whatever reason, they're just smaller and haven't grown yet. He has size going for him. And I also think that he even as a freshman, you sort of saw that he has an offensive mindset that I think is lacking in a lot of the options right now for the Bruins, except for personally, I think Matt Grizzlick really has it going, but obviously what the future holds across the board for our defensemen is unclear. So in that sense, I don't see it being terribly far off. I could see him getting time this year, especially given the cap situation and just where our options are at. But I'm feeling optimistic about it. I think that there's a lot to like about his game. I think that experience is going to help a lot. But, you know, it's not like there haven't been really successful players that have jumped right in into playing in the NHL and have not succeeded, even if they haven't had all the AHL experience. So, yeah, I like that much about him. I think that it will still take a lot for him to earn a spot full time, but I could definitely see him getting minutes, and I wouldn't hate it. I think that he's a great player and I like to watch him. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on him?
I do agree with a lot of the he's raw, you know, and there's so much more potential. I don't think we've actually seen his full potential at the AHL level. I think he was trying sometimes too hard, maybe squeezing the stick a little tight, but that happens often to the young youth that are just transitioning into the pro levels. But I do like his offensive prowess and way the way he can read a play and so on, and also generate a play with transition out of the defensive zone. He's a big defenseman that's got really good hands and a good stride. So when he gets going, it's really hard for anybody to stop him. But I think his puck transitioning and his puck protection just needs to be a little more attentive, if that it could be used. And I think by having him in Boston all summer, working with you know, skating coaches and so on, and offensive skilled coaches, maybe even Adam McQuaid, you know, development camp coming up and so on, you know, he's going to get a lot of tutelage from several members of the developing core in the Bruins organization. And I think that if he has a solid summer, really good camp, I mean, I think he might even, you know, participate in the Prospects Challenge in Buffalo. I think those things can build him up to having a really good camp and really have management like say, this kid's an option for us to be cap compliant. But also on the other side of the coin, I'm also all for him to get a full year in the American Hockey League as well, if he doesn't get that NHL roster spot right out of the gate. So there's a ton of options and potential for this type of player just to really excel in his early pro years. And I'm excited to see how he absorbs it all, because, you know, a defenseman that of his size that moves so well like him is like a really good package to have for the future. And right now the future looks grim because of the salary cap constraints that Don Sweeney and Evan Gold and the Boston Bruins are going to have to go through. So I mean, we might see, and I want to call it a mini youth movement coming up, where the Bruins are going to have to, are probably going to go through some pretty lean years. As much as that is exciting to get, you know, more youth involved, it's not a great start to, you know, an upcoming season when you're just basically moving these players up because of their low AAVs. And obviously trades are going to happen, and we'll hear from Don Sweeney when I mean, not trades, but, you know, signings, departures, and all this is going to happen to be cap compliant. So it's going to be difficult no matter what, but, you know, getting these younger players involved is something that I believe is important. And I hate to say it, but we're probably going to see some players that are going to be departing. And we'll talk about the roster next week, what we think the roster will be when Steve, the main host, Steve Forney, comes back. I want to get all three of us together and just do a little bit of homework and figure out, hey, is this the youth movement? What's our roster going to be like? Or what's the roster going to be like without Patrice Bergeron or without David Krejci? Because Don Sweeney did mention that both scenarios are going to coincide with what their plan is. They're always going to have a plan A, plan B. So, you know, getting youth involved is not a bad idea, but can you bring these veterans back when you need to be cap compliant before the October season comes?
Yeah. And I think that that's going to be a sort of interesting limiting factor. Cause on the one hand you're like, oh, it makes it easier because you're not going to you don't have a lot of space to like do a whole lot, but at the same time, it's like that means cutting some pretty serious losses at that point. And you know, recognizing that so many people that we liked and that we feel like are important are just gone. And so I think it is going to be hard, but yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to getting our heads together and seeing what we think about the future next year, because there are so many options, so many prospects that are great. And, you know, American Hockey League players that were very successful this season and that I think have earned a chance to show what they can do at the NHL level, players who I think can continue to do that, and who have had a few opportunities already. So I'm looking forward to seeing that potential youth movement, even though it will be scary and nerve-wracking. But then again, you know, so was this season. We were scared and worried about certain things, and this is just another thing that I think it's the opportunity for you know, the team to prove that they can handle anything. So I'm hoping that that's what they're able to do, especially with an addition like Lowry.
Yeah. And talking about the Bergeron and Krejci thing, here is Don Sweeney's but it was the ownership and management press conference, season ending press conference that they had earlier this week, when he talks about those two and the possible timeline.
The question is whether or not we need a time frame, definitive time frame, on regards to David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron. The answer is no. We went through this exercise last off season, in putting together sort of two simultaneous rosters. You know, I probably had a indication early enough last summer to go in the direction that we were able to execute. You know, some things came after that. You know, Pavel Zacha is an example of you know, sort of understanding where we may be and where we want to be. The goal was to build the deepest team we possibly could, and we fell short ultimately. And the goal will be, you look at the core group of guys we currently have that had very, very successful regular seasons, and it will be built around that. It may be in integrating younger players. So you can already see where our minds are going in terms of running simultaneous things. And we'll respect the timelines on David and Patrice as necessary.
It's so hard to think about what these two players are going to do because of their accomplishments with the Boston Bruins and what they've contributed throughout their you know, illustrious careers, especially Bergeron. I mean, he's our white whale. You know what I mean? He's just that like, I don't want to say perfect because nobody's perfect, but he's just that type of human that does everything he needs to for himself, his family, and his team. Organization always comes first, and so on. And if he chooses to go, it's gonna suck. Obviously, Krejci as well, but I'm more on the line of I'm okay if Krejci has to go, because we need all the available cap space, you know. And bringing somebody back at $1 million is setting you back just a little bit on next year's progression when you're thinking about being cap compliant. So I don't know. I forgot what I was going to say, but what were your feelings on that particular clip and his ideas? Oh, I did know what I was going to say. I'm sorry, Grace, but they do need to figure out when it happens, because if there's a move after July 1st that they could do, I don't want to hear, oh, we're waiting on David Krejci, we're waiting on Patrice Bergeron to figure out what they're doing. I believe that those two players, and I'm being selfish, I get it, but I believe that those two players really need to have figured out what their plan is. Is it retirement or coming back to get ready for this cap crunch and where we're going to, you know, put pieces together and so on with them coming back? Or we need to know ahead of time so we can prepare for what's to come in free agency, if we need to use any of that available cap space that they carried last year into getting a new player this year, if it all works out cap wise. So thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think that it's hard. It is. I struggle not to call Patrice Bergeron perfect. I think that it's just, we've been so lucky to have him regardless of when he leaves. So I want to always like put that at the forefront of my mind that we can be grateful. He came back this season. He did incredible things at any age, but at his age especially. And just so while I want to, you know, obviously keep him around forever and ever, I know that can't happen. And I agree that I forget which one of them it was. I think it was Bergeron who said he would have he thought that it wouldn't take him until July 1st to decide. And, you know, I don't know. I think that that you're right. There's this positive spin to put on it that if they don't come back, it's that little bit of extra space, you know, to make things happen. And I agree. Like, if I had to choose one or the other, I'd want Bergeron back. I think that that's just, you know, a safe pick. But I also, I don't know, I would like to see Krejci back. I think that there's, as much as it would help to have, you know, every little bit is going to count in the end with cap space, I think that having them back, we're better with them. And so I'd rather have them back, even given that, you know, limitation. But I don't know, I do think that figuring it out sooner rather than later is going to be really important. And the way that, you know, Sweeney made it sound like, yes, he's, I know, waiting for them and they can take their time with their decision. But, you know, you can tell that there's a sense of urgency across the board because you do have these moving parts that now you have to factor into consideration. Which players are you going to move up? Where are you going to have holes in the roster? And I think that urgency is, it's palpable, I think, especially in the fan base, because we had such a successful season and we're not ready to see that just go down the drain. And so if we lose, you know, two franchise players in David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron, and now we're filling those holes with these names that people who don't watch the American Hockey League have never heard of, or don't watch NCAA hockey have never heard of, it can feel stressful. But I think that they'll decide soon. Maybe that's wishful thinking. And so I think that we'll have answers sooner rather than later. But I want them back. I think everybody does. But I also think that we have options without them. So whatever decision they have to make, I hope they make it quickly. And I think they will. Right now, I'm on the, I don't think they're going to come back. That's my theory. But but I've gone back and forth every week, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely dive into that next week when we get our rosters. I'll be really curious to see where your thoughts are going with how each line is constructed and who's coming back and who's going and so on. So it's going to be a fun discussion.
I do want to make sure people make a fast break to FanDuel during the NBA playoffs. Right now, new customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's $1,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet does not win. But there's no better place to bet all the playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. You can visit FanDuel.com/Boston and get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's FanDuel.com/Boston. FanDuel is the official sports betting partner of the NBA. 21+ in select states. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit required. Refund is issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under agreement with the Kansas Star Casino LLC. So congratulations to Kansas. If you have a gambling problem, you can call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG. Also, you can take the next step with 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT STEP to 53342. That is if you live in the state of Arizona. Shout out to all of our Arizona peeps. In Connecticut, 1-888-789-7777, or you can visit ccpg.org/chat. Indiana, we can go through Indiana, sure, 1-800-9-WITH-IT, WITHIT for our folks in Pawnee, Indiana, 1-800-552-4700 for our folks in Kansas, and let's find our wonderful people here in Massachusetts, gamblinghelplinema.org, or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support here in Massachusetts. And Hope is available as well. If you do have the gambling problem, you can reach out to any of those places. They would be happy to assist you.
All right, we're back. We just heard from our great title sponsor, FanDuel. Please sign up at FanDuel.com/Boston. Really does us a great deal of service if you guys do that, if you're into the gambling and so on. Really good welcome bonuses, the best around, particularly in Massachusetts, who just became legal beagle not too long ago, you know, in March. So, and we've been using FanDuel all the time. I know Grace is a fun gambler. I'm a little fun myself. I'm not very good at it, but it's just... That's the way it works. It's like you don't have to make $1,000 bet all the time. It's just like a dollar, a $5 little wager. And all of a sudden you get eight legs on it and it pays out. It's like $200, $300. So it's awesome.
Yeah. I was just saying that this morning I was in Massachusetts. I was putting my bets down. I made a great a six-leg parlay on the Celtics game. $3, but it's got a $76 payout, and I'm feeling really good. So I'm nice. Ready to go. I'm ready to watch this game, ready to be hurt by the Celtics, but I'm excited. I'm excited because I think that I'm gonna make some money. So can't say enough good things awesome. About FanDuel.
That's right. I forgot to tee this one up, but this is basically the feeling that I got, and I clipped it all together to get all four members that were at the press conference last week. It was Don Sweeney, it was Charlie Jacobs, it was Cam Neely, and obviously the coach Jim Montgomery. So this is the kind of feeling that I got out of it, and I don't know, it was kind of somber at the same time, but still it was kind of cool to hear that they want to move forward, but they learned something about this. So this is B's management in a real short clip. So
for me, it's been quite an empty feeling, to be honest with you. You take a look at 2019, the loss in game 7. This is a close second to that for me.
Frustrated, mad, accountable. Knowing all that was put into this season, all the potential we had for this run, and it's incredibly disappointing.
I mean, I echo all the responses thus far. It's an empty feeling that you know the players are going through it, and it's, you look at the season and you lose sight of the accomplishment because of the failure. And that's ultimately what you're going to be judged upon. And that's what we sign up for.
In a nutshell, that was a very depressing press conference, to be honest with you. And the start of it, I heard from fellow media members. I wasn't there, but I was contacted by Jimmy Murphy, and he was just like, dude, this is bad. Like the audio, when Jim Montgomery was about to talk, did you watch the live?
I did.
Oh my God. The technical difficulties was so bad. Every time somebody wanted to speak on the mic, the reverb was so loud. And those guys were right on top of the PA system. I could just imagine how bad Montgomery's ears were ringing.
Oh God. I know they've been having some weird, then during the exit interviews, the fire alarm was going off in Warrior Ice Arena. There's just been it feels cursed. It just feels like a curse.
Yes, it does. Oh my
already.
God.
I mean, still, it's extending. But yeah, no, watching that is hard. I it's good to see. I think there was a lot of anger, and I think rightfully so after the loss with Jim Montgomery, and even in the last couple days of the series, when Jim Montgomery seemed oh, this is a fun series. It's great. I love it. And so I think people were rightfully kind of pissed that they felt it wasn't being taken that seriously. And then look where that got us. But I did feel grateful, even though it was hard to watch in a somber sense. It was good to see that I think there's personal accountability, that there's personal, growth in as much as there can be in 2 weeks, just seeing that this was a disaster and it was completely not what we wanted to have happen. And there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of accountability to be held against everybody in the organization. So that was good at least, but tough watch. I mean, they're defeated. Cam Neely, especially, it was tough to watch him and listen to him. He looked like he was ready to crawl across the floor and walk out of that press conference immediately. So it sucks because it's, you see what they're feeling and you're like, oh yeah, that's what I've been feeling. I get that.
Oh yeah.
So tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's, and all these videos are courtesy of the bostonbruins.com website. So I got to give credit to them. Don Sweeney just kind of summed it up in a minute right here. I just said, basically what happened in his eyes.
Jim and I communicate every day. So, in recapping the events, in the playoffs, we went through a litany of things and areas that we would maybe look at it a little differently and try and and improve as we go forward and putting players in different situations. So we have to have those difficult discussions. It's not about just pointing the finger at any one person. At the end of the day, you know, ill-timed, poor execution was a massive problem for us, you know, in particular in some of the games. You know, breakdown in structure, which we really hadn't done for vast majority of the season, ill-timed. And our goaltending wasn't at the same levels of the regular season. So those three things combined are going to lead to variance in results. Now, you can pinpoint and start to point fingers, but that's not what this organization is about. You take that collective failure, and you have to acknowledge the areas that you're going to improve. And Jim's referencing some of those things, and so am I. So behind closed doors, we are going to call each other out in those areas and pinpoint. It's not any one singular person's fault. Everybody makes mistakes.
And the ending is most important to that clip right there is we're not pointing fingers, and it's a collective thing, and we need to learn. It's just that narrative right there is intriguing to me because of just the way it failed and how it failed and how it just flipped on a switch from the regular season to start the playoffs and so on, and how you sustained yourself in that postseason first round was just not, it wasn't good. There was no execution at all. I mean, even though they were up 3-1 in any of those three games that they won, they didn't look comfortable doing it. You know, it's just like, maybe I don't like the idea of, you remember a couple episodes ago when Sharon Dietz called in and said something about, she didn't like the idea of hearing Coach Montgomery say, I don't have to coach these guys. I lean back and let these guys coach themselves. I think right there, I was just like, what is going on here? You know, you need to take control of that bench, you know, it, and I get that it's a heavy laden veteran core, you know, a couple of Hall of Famers are probably going to go, but still you have to have the voice. And I honestly just don't think that Jim Montgomery was fully prepared for this to come at him and how these guys just weren't fully committed or bought in and how he didn't respond in a way. I think by him doing the Cam Neely water bottle spike was too late in game six. It was too late, you know, and so many other decisions we'll get to, but I mean, just to wrap that whole thing up. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was Steve was a big proponent of this idea that, you know, we've sort of done this unique thing, taking Jim Montgomery, who he has some coaching experience and head coaching experience, but it's limited compared to these guys who you see getting recycled throughout the league. You know, Maurice is one, and we saw that on full display. But that's why it sort of cut both ways here, is that there is this new coach who clearly didn't have the experience or necessary skills. Steve kept saying over and over again last week, he got outcoached, and he totally did. And it is a combination of not knowing how to, you know, deal with having to protect players from themselves. You know, Patrice Bergeron, Allmark wanting to play, saying they're fine, not being 100%. And also not making the right adjustments, putting things into a blender. I think that all of those things sort of illustrated why a lot of teams in the league don't go to a newer coach and do keep recycling these same guys who have the experience, just because if you do go to a new guy, then you could see something like what happened to the Boston Bruins in 2023. And so it is a double-edged sword, but I think that it was a good experience now. I think that this is the beginning. This is what I think and I hope that all coaches have to go through at one point or another, a really serious, you know, kick in the ass about what went wrong. So I think that that's an important, you know, thing that we kind of saw. That anger of the things that Jim Montgomery was saying about, oh, you know, they can just coach themselves. You're like, no, I want you to coach them. Like, I trust them. They're veterans. They're great. But I want you to coach them. You're the coach, and you're a good coach. And I think that he is a good coach. So that it definitely, it's hard, but I think that still, I'm still on the Monty train. I still think it's the right decision to have him around. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds next year, especially come playoff time and towards the latter half of the season where we kind of saw him slip.
Yeah. Speaking of Jim Montgomery, this is him at the last week's presser, courtesy of the BostonBruins.com website.
The question was, how many teachable moments did I learn from in the playoffs? You know, the overriding one is it's my job to get players to own the moment, seize the moment. And that didn't happen, right? And that falls on me. And I think with the hard times we went through, right, we have to learn from them, right? If we don't learn from them, how are we going to grow? Like, we'll just repeat the same thing next year. So for me, it's being able to connect with the players over the course of the summer and build through training camp about what we have to do to make sure that we don't have the same energy level, because we didn't have the same energy level we had in the regular season. We didn't have the same puck confidence that we had in the regular season, you know, and it hurts right now. Like, I mean, it's, I've talked to players, you know, like, it's hard right now. It's hard for our fans. It's hard for us.
Extremely difficult for everybody, you know, but I want to ask you something. Like, we've heard when he got hired, and we do our research back to St. Louis, we do our research back to Dallas, we do our research even back to college in Colorado when he was coaching, and then going back to his college days at Maine, and everybody's saying that he is a player's coach. So by hearing that and what he needs to do during the offseason, I believe he still wants to be that type of communicator, that strong communicator to all the lineups and even the groups that he's put into to communicate and so on. But is this the time that he kind of, listen, I need to coach. I need to be a little more stern in what I'm saying to get those results that ultimately he didn't get. And I'm not saying that he needs to take a page out of Bruce Cassidy's book and be an ass or not communicate and just point fingers and, you know, and be the yes man and whatever. But still, there's a time and a place where, yeah, we're buddies, but we also have a freaking job to do. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on what, like, how Montgomery came off to you in those sentiments.
Yeah, in that part in particular, there were other parts that gave me more hope. But that part in particular, yeah, it did sort of sound like that same type of coaching that we've seen from him throughout the season that we kind of came to expect, and that I think you're right, kind of did not bode well in the playoffs. I agree that there's a fine line to be walked, and I think that during the regular season it worked and it was great, but then as things started to get more intense towards the end of the season and into the playoffs, you sort of saw the shortcomings of when you are having to make these really quick adjustments against, because you know you're playing a team potentially seven times in a row. It's not the same as, you know, having one thing that works and just tiny adjustments from game to game, but this is you're learning from another team. You're figuring out how they're doing. And we saw Maurice make those adjustments on the other side. And so I think that that's where we started to see that, you know, being one of the guys, one of the players, like that mentality did not serve him well. I think about at my school, there was a coach who was hired straight after playing off the team in the college. And she talked about like having to separate yourself into two separate parts of being a coach, where you're a friend to the players, but you're also the person who's looking out for them and making sure that they're doing the things they need to do to be held accountable. So I think that Montgomery is learning that line now, but it didn't work. And that clip there, I get nervous, but I'm hopeful that he can take the pieces that were working very well in terms of being, you know, recognizing the strengths of the players, appreciating those strengths, the things that they have to offer, the way they see the game, and hopefully fine tune it enough to make those adjustments as the leader in the room and the guy who makes the final call on things.
Great segue right there, because I got a clip right here of Monty talking about the goalies and how he was used and goalie Bob. He talked about that because that has been a really big narrative for this offseason so far, is, you know, like, who's the decision maker? Who, you know, let's hear this and we'll talk about it right after.
First of all, like all season long, I said, you know, goalie Bob, you know, makes the decision. I make the final decision, right? I'm the one that picks the starter. So it's not goalie Bob's decision, but I really rely on him heavily. And to answer your question specifically is, you know, we discuss this as a staff. I will talk in the playoffs, especially even more so with Sweens and Cam, you know, and in the end, we wins game 3 and 4. So you have 2 days off. I think game 5 is going to go well. And I personally, you know, spoke with Linus, and he answered me a real honest question and took ownership of where he was at in game 5. And what he relayed to me made me believe that you learn and you grow, and he was ready to grow and lead us to game 6 win. And that in the end is what made me decide that he was our goaltender for game 6.
All right. So it's the whole thing in my mind, Grace, of you own the roster, the final roster that goes out, you know, and I understand that he really looks at goalie Bob for guidance and so on in that particular area of the game. But ultimately, you own the roster. So I'm going to bring Patrice Bergeron into this as well. And obviously, it's you. I don't know how I would, you know, construct a conversation with Patrice Bergeron about this, because I know from watching this guy from his whole career how dedicated he is to this organization and his team, along with the coaching staff. But also, if you know that you're injured and you're not going to be 100% with the depth that this freaking team had during the regular season, and you didn't use it effectively covering for an injured guy who had a herniated disc, who was, and I'm hearing, basically was going to be scratched out for the whole playoffs after that Montreal game, came back. Now, to me, you own the roster. Well, I would have said, Patrice, we're winning. We have something here without you. Maybe just rest more and we'll get you involved and do a potential second round, third round, whatever. But still, you need the absolute rest right now. And ultimately, I mean, it was a gamble. Everything's a gamble. Like, I get it and so on. And I'm probably going to get hammered for, like, my Patrice. Like, I'm not hating on Patrice or anything. I'm just not liking the idea of injured players basically given an ultimatum saying, I'm playing this game. Well, you don't obviously own the roster if you're giving it these opportunities to the players to say, yeah, I'm going in and shutting it down. So, I mean, I would not play Linus if he was injured. You have a healthy Swayman. It's like I said a couple podcasts ago, it's not like we're bringing up Kyle Kaiser and like we're going to do a rotation with him with very limited NHL experience. I actually don't think he has one NHL game, but still, you have 1A, 1B, and you didn't use it in at least game 5. That's one thing that I will strongly agree with Steve Forney on, is the way that the goaltending was scheduled out. Why did you wait for a healthy Swayman to get into game 7? Makes absolutely no sense.
I agree completely. You're completely right. It's ridiculous that it happened the way that it happened. And I think you're right. It shows that weakness of not having the control of the roster. And you're right. I could not imagine being in Montgomery's shoes, not as much for Ullmark, although certainly to some extent, but definitely like Bergeron. Like, he's been playing in the league almost as long as I've been alive. And I, you know, personally would not be able to be like, you don't know what's best. Like, you don't know what's best for this team. Like, it's better for you to sit and get better or whatever. Like, if he's saying, you know, the way that it was described is, Monty, I'm playing. I don't know. Who am I to be like, no, you know, don't do that. But so I think that it's hard. But I think that shows the sort of issues that really arose when we had this depth to work with and we didn't use it. Or we used it in weird ways and in weird places, like not using Matt Grizzlick, sometimes using Matt Grizzlick, being so cool with Derek Forbert the whole time.
Another one.
I don't know.
Another one.
Like, it's just, it's kind of weird because we talked about it so much, but like, where was the depth that was so strong? Were we just not using it? Was there too much of it? And so I think that clip especially is very indicative of what went wrong, which was that not controlling the roster and controlling the players, you know. And I don't mean that in like a, you know, telling them exactly what is correct and what's necessarily wrong, but at the very least protecting them from themselves and recognizing where maybe they don't have the best, you know, vision. They're not viewing the whole thing from the top. So I don't know, it's hard. Everything is hard in hindsight because you're like, why, you know, I saw so many tweets about people like, you know, if you could go back in time and say, start Swayman in game five, like you want that. Cause it, you're right. It wasn't Halak. It wasn't even like an Alex Lyon, which the Cats were totally fine using and they clearly showed it. And so I don't know. I wish that we had had that sort of confidence and that's the thing. It like, the fan base, I know, had all the confidence in the world in Swayman. I had all the confidence in the world in Swayman. I honestly think that even if Swayman had started every single game, we still would have had a chance. I mean, I know it's hard because Vezina, you know, soon to be, knock on wood, Vezina trophy winner, Linus Ullmark. Like, I don't know. I worry that, I don't want it to, I hope that it wasn't a lack of trust towards Swayman, because I feel like he gave every reason for us to trust him. I think it was just wherever it came from, Montgomery, goalie Bob, Ullmark himself. You know, I hope that that's another place that we learn from. And I want to see both goalies back. I know I said it last week. I'll say it again. I want to see them both back. So I hope that we learn from it going forward. And hopefully we see that accountability from Jim Montgomery.
Absolutely. And as we wind down the show, we're you know, got about 15 more minutes. I did want to talk about our show sponsor, Action Electronics, the great folks down in Walpole, Massachusetts. Amazing people, and we thank them for their contributions every week to this program, and also spread the news about them. So let's hear about Action Electronics, and we'll be right back. All right, now it's time to talk about our sponsor, Action Electronics. For over 30 years, Action Electronics, a Walpole, Massachusetts company, has been the leading source of value-added, time-saving supply chain issues. Visit them online at actionelectronics.com. Please give their customer service a call at 508-668-3131 and follow the company's social media accounts. Facebook.com/ActionElectronics, Twitter.com/AESupplyChain, on Instagram at Instagram.com/ActionElectronics. Also, please follow the official Action Electronics YouTube channel at Action Electronics TV. We give a shout out to Barry and Nick for the continued support and setting this whole thing up to be a sponsor, as we'd love to move their business forward to our listeners who have supply chain issues. These are the people you need to call, whether it be compressors, chillers, anything that is stopping you from moving forward. These guys have the alternatives to make your supply chain issue flawless. So please reach out to them. They're great people, and we love having them here at the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. All right, we're back talking bees, and we want to thank Action Electronics, as always. They're amazing people. Shout out to my boy Barry, and shout out to my boy Nick over there at AE. Guys are amazing. So back talking bees, and we're probably pretty much going to do like a punch list of stuff right now. The Boston Globe, Kevin Paul DuPont, wrote a very interesting article. Now, listen, I love KPD. I have for years. The guy just asks really good questions. And I've been a media member several times, not full-time media, but I've been up to the ninth floor. I've been downstairs when he asks questions. This guy, you know, his experience just, it really tells a whole tale. But I know it's the off season, Kevin, but wow, it's like you're really pulling for the for the content in this long off season. So, but he said, should the Bruins make a bold move and try to acquire Connor Bedard, the potential first-round pick this season from the draft in Nashville, Tennessee, coming up soon in late June, I believe. So What are your thoughts before I give my opinion?
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. I love Kevin's work. I think that it's amazing. I think I said it in my, I quote tweeted it and I said, Kevin, thank you so much for asking. No, I don't think that we should do that.
See that.
because I think that, like, I've seen like a whole bunch of all these teams across the board are, how can we trade up for Connor Bedard? I think the kid is great, but I just don't see it. I mean, it's definitely plausible in the sense that anything is possible, but I mean, you would have to, you'd have to be cutting a lot of pieces, and then you're sort of expecting Connor Bedard to make up for all those pieces you lost. Like, he's great, but is he that great? Are we really fine losing that much personnel for it? So I'm on the no train. I am interested to see what happens with him, where he goes, if it is Chicago or if something happens. But I'm good. I'm okay. Thanks. Thank you, Connor, but I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, this was more or less like an idea, like grabbing a grenade and running down a hallway of rooms and finding a room full of people and just throwing it in there. And then, hey, whoever survives, we'll see what happens. That kind of scenario. But no, it's like you don't want to give up assets, because whether you agree or not, audio listeners and video viewers on YouTube, or Grace, if you agree or not, this is kind of a retool, kind of rebuild. And you're already 10 steps behind because of what happened. You gave up so much draft capital to get Dmitry Orlov, to get Hathaway, to get Bertuzzi, first round pick in 2024. You don't have a first round pick this summer, a second round pick this summer. Next summer, you don't have a first, second, or third. So at this point, you don't have draft capital, which holds a lot of leverage in trades. So what you're potentially looking at is goodbye Swayman, goodbye McAvoy, goodbye Lysell, Merkulov, Lowry. I mean, those are the pieces that Chicago is going to want to get for a guy, a generational talent, whether you call him that or not. And he's undersized and so on, which everybody is going to hamper. He's not 6 feet tall. He's an AHL lifer. It's like, oh, give me a break. But those are the pieces that are going to go the other way. So now those 10 steps, now you're 30 steps behind on what you're trying to accomplish next year and the foreseeable future, even when the cap does possibly go up $4 or $5 million.
I think that it'll be really tough. I think you're right. I think that it'll be really tough, especially to pry him from Chicago. So I don't see it happening. I don't necessarily even want it to happen. But yeah, like I said, I'm excited to see what does happen with him. I think he's a great player, so I think it'll be good to watch, but I don't know. I don't see it. I don't see the vision for the Bruins.
Yeah. Another one that is making waves. I'm not saying it's trending on Twitter, but it does get into people's conversations. And is Bruins defenseman Charlie McAvoy elite? And should he be traded because he's overrated? This is the type of stuff I'm hearing this summer and seeing, not only on Twitter, but like on Facebook, which is absolutely trash for Bruins talk, in my opinion. I love my Bruins fans, on Facebook. I really do. But some of them, I'm like, oh my God, they're so irrational. Like, they want to blow the team up and start from scratch. And it's like, okay, but that's not going to give you a winning team in the next 3 to 5 seasons.
Right.
You know, it's just, they're shooting from the hip because of what happened. You know, this was a meltdown of epic proportions in the postseason that is going to affect every Bruins fan until the first day of October, possibly even further for the crazies out there. But still, I mean, you can't fire from the hip with stuff like that. Like, Charlie McAvoy is the type of player you build on, you know? I mean, this is the guy that's going to be giving confidence and inspiration and leadership values to a player like Mason Lowry, much yes. like Zdeno Chara did to him. So it's not about playing ability. I think most say that, oh, he's always like ranked as a Norris, a trophy candidate, but he hasn't captured the trophy yet. He's not an elite player. That's bullshit. That's absolute yep. bullshit, in my opinion. You just yep. don't get rid of players like that because you're you don't think that he's elite. I mean, is he elite? He may not. He's not a Mikhail Carr. Wow. It's the off season, all right? And I know I stumble my words all the time, but still, that was pretty bad for an off season.
He's not playing right now either. He's out too, so I don't know what he's doing.
I know, right?
Yeah, no, I totally understand. I think that I'm trying to come at this as most unbiased as I can, because Charlie McAvoy is one of my favorite Bruins of all time. Because I love his play. I love his leadership. I think his commitment to the team. But that aside, you know, I don't really, especially because the Norris has kind of become like the best offensive defenseman. And I don't necessarily think that that's 100% Charlie McAvoy's game. And I don't want it to be. I think that, yes, I want him to continue to generate offense, which I feel like towards the end of the season, he didn't do as much. But he's a fantastic defensive player and a fantastic leader. You're completely right. I see so much of what Chara instilled in him continue to make itself present. And I want to see him grow the next generation of Bruins defensemen, because that's been sort of a very historically Boston thing, I think, is to have this really strong decor that comes from the older players, you know, instilling a certain competitive edge and skill set to the younger players. So to me, whether or not anybody thinks he's elite, I do. I just want to put that out there. But whether or not other people do necessarily, I think that what he offers is so much more than that. And so I'm so off board the get rid of Charlie McAvoy train. It's insane. I am not even close to the station. I am 1,000 miles away from any railroad tracks that are boasting a train that wants to trade Charlie McAvoy. But so that's where I stand. I love him. I'll always love him. I understand, you know, the shooting from the hip, it's scary. This is a scary time, but that one, I couldn't do it.
I think it was Friday that the NHL named David Pastrnak as a Hart Trophy finalist. This is a great accolade for him, obviously. I don't think he's going to get it because of the points and so on. And I, you know, he might be in the top three of league scoring and so on. But obviously, I mean, you got to look at Connor McDavid numbers. You got to look at possibly Austin Matthews. I don't know. And possibly some other players around the league that had great years and really helped turn their franchise around into a positive. And obviously, this is not an award for the playoffs, because if so, David Pastrnak would probably not get it. But still, it's good that he's getting, you know, looked at nationally, you know, in the league. He is one of the, you know, better players in the league, and also a great ambassador to our younger fans and so on. You know, he's very fun. You know, he interacts in games and the pre-skates and so on. You know, he's a good player, but. You know, if he wins it, awesome. You know, that's awesome. I mean, the Bruins are going to take a lot of trophies home. I mean, even on Friday, Linus Allmark was named to the Vezina Trophy finalist. And I think that he's probably going to win that. And, you know, it's unfortunate that this guy could possibly win the Jennings Trophy. He did win the Jennings Trophy with fellow goaltender Jeremy Swayman and win the Vezina. But also be traded, you know, sometime this season. There's talk about that as well. So thoughts on Pastrnak being a Hart Trophy and obviously Linus getting the Vezina.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I mean, I'm obviously amazed by the number of awards that Bruins players are finalists for, and that I think they're probably going to win. You know, you look at Omark with the Vezina, you look at Bergeron with the Selke, you look at Jim Montgomery with Jack Adams. So all of that is great. You're right. I don't think that Pastrnak is going to get it. Hey, I think that Connor McDavid is also happy that it's not about the playoffs, because he's been quiet too. In that case, of the three finalists, like I think Matthew Tkachuk would win if you throw the playoffs in there too. I think that it's great. You're right. I don't think he's going to get it, but I do. I just think that he's such an incredible player, and also just the way that he has, you know, style wise, personality wise, like community wise, the way that he's really contributed to the game, and I think that brought in more fans and made people more interested in things has been amazing. So I'm super glad that he's getting the recognition that he deserves. I'll always think that he deserves more, but he had a great season. He really, you know, we wouldn't have gotten the wins that we had without him. So, you know, for the past 5 years, we wouldn't have gotten the wins that we had without him. But, and then, yeah, with Ullmark, I think it's a shoe-in. I don't want to knock on wood again, but it does suck. You hate to see the way it ended and worry about the future, because now he has proven himself. You're right, maybe not in the playoffs, but he proved that he is an elite goaltender in this league, and people are going to see that and want him. So I think, you know, he's one that we'll have to talk about next week, but I think that so well-deserved, obviously. I mean, you can't do what he did and not get some recognition. So definitely it's a good award season for the Bruins. I wish they were still playing still. I think I'd trade the awards for that, but here we are. So I'll take the awards.
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of like the different you know, roster next season, this is what Don Sweeney had to say, and this is the last clip I have from the BostonBruins.com website.
Just categorically sign those players today. You know, our cap situation, we leveraged, you know, a little bit. Everybody knows our overage at 4.5. So we have some constraints, as do several other teams around the league. Our goal was to put, you know, this season was to put the absolute best roster we could put together. And try and take a real legitimate run. And we failed, no question. So, you know, we have to pay that forward a little bit. That might mean we're instituting younger players. That might mean roster changes, which we would like to make. That might mean I might be able to sign, as you referenced, one of those three players or other unrestricted players. We have to address the two RFAs in Frederick and Swayman, which we will do. And, you know, roster changes are likely coming. You know, we're not going to be the same team.
So, I mean, I know we'll talk about our rosters later next week and so on, but there's another narrative that, you know, over the week that, you know, if you want to shed cap space, you approach Lenius and you ask him to be moved, you know, he carries $5 million in cap space. He's got, I think, 2 more years under contract, you know, that term and that money, like you said, could, and also all the you know, regular season accolades of a Vezina and a Jennings Trophy, all those packaged up is a very attractive thing for another team to take on, and another team that needs a starting goaltender right away. But it sucks as a human being, as a regular worker like myself. I get a 40-hour week job. You know, plus I got another 40-hour week job at B&G all the time. But my regular job is, you know, you got to go and do what you got to do, you know, and you got to make sacrifices. This is something that he's going to have to think about, too, is like, you know, would I be willing to move my family somewhere else? Because we've been, you know, we moved from Buffalo to Boston and so on, blah, blah, blah. Or to shed that cap space, do we really have to get rid of one of the best goalie tandems in the league, especially during the regular season? It's really tough situations to think about, but as a business, you do have to be cap compliant. You do have to put a competitive team out there next season, whether that be integrating younger members or bringing back veteran players, you know, at league minimums. You still have to do something about, because there is a laundry list of things to do. There's RFAs, UFAs that you got to sign. So, I mean, I'd hate to see him go, but it's not unrealistic that they ask him to move his, because I think he's got a 15 or a 16 team trade list that, you know, he can be moved to. So, yep. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of lost on this conversation, but when you think about the cap space that we need, I mean, that's a viable option as well. But also, if you step out of the crease, is a player like Taylor Hall that type of player at $6 million? Now, I mean, I like Taylor. I like his work ethic. I think he's been a real solid Bruin since he got here. But also, he provides that offensive capability, not at a top-line level, but he still gets you that secondary scoring option. I think that it would be beneficial for him to stay. But as a business, you need to shed money. there's another option that you could do too. And I know other teams will look at him and his veteran, you know, his years in the league as a solid veteran and so on, that it'd be attractive for them too. So there's so many different things that could go on this offseason. It's just, it scrambles my mind, but it's intriguing at the same time to think about.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right. It's so hard. You don't want to see Omar go. And everybody on Twitter obviously has been saying the same thing. They don't want to see him go. And I don't want to see any of them go, but they're going to have to. Like, there are so many people that are going to have to move on. And you're, mark my words, if it happens, if he ends up being moved, I would bet that he would go to Ottawa. That's my number one. They no longer have Talbot. They need a goalie. They were bottom 16. That's my prediction. But I would like to see him stay. You're right. You look at Taylor Hall, you look at a lot of pieces that when we're every little bit is gonna count. Every little bit is going to count in terms of cap space. So I don't know. I worry about, you know, my favorite players. I worry about everybody's favorite players because this was supposed to be the year, you know, with these players that we loved, and it would have made it a little bit still hard, but a little less bitter to see them go after, you know, if they'd been able to take home the hardware. So I am excited to see what happens, but super nervous. And I'm looking forward to us, you know, really getting into it in the next couple of weeks. And as the off season progresses with movements, who's staying, who's going. So it's going to be interesting, scary, interesting, but scary.
Yes, it is. Let's wrap up this Black and Gold Hockey Podcast episode 330, the Mother's Day edition. Grace, thank you very much as always. A real trooper, getting timelines together and to do this program. You're on the travel, you're in a hotel. I really, really admire the passion to get this done through everything that you've been through in the past couple of week or so.
Well, this is my favorite part of the week, so I'm always happy to be here. I hope that everybody has a great Mother's Day. Shout out to my mom. She's cool. She's helped me move into Jacksonville this weekend. Nice. So couldn't have done it without her. So hope everybody is able to do something fun and celebrate today.
Absolutely. And I do want to mention a couple things that we need more Boston Bruins podcasts to join our growing Black and Gold Productions podcast network. And we could use more website writers. We have credential opportunities are available at the NHL, AHL and ECHL level. So if you happen to live in Portland, Maine, you have to live in Providence, Rhode Island, or even Boston, Mass, and you can get to games and you want to contribute writing on the website or starting a podcast, please let me know. Black and Gold Productions, LLC@gmail.com. We'd love to have more content creators. We want to grow this business even further. And I think this off season, we're really going to start doing that. We're getting more committed writers to do content creators to create content weekly. So that's our goal. And we also have a Patreon account, and I got some real goodies this past week. My boy, Bruce Sullivan from Boston Sports and Music Memorabilia, I reached out to him and purchased 3 jerseys. So the next 3 months are all taken care of. And this month, the month of May, we are giving away a Matt Grizzlick hand-signed jersey. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
And that is awesome.
Fully authenticated from JSA, stitched, all really nice jersey. This is all for $1, folks. You can get that jersey and the upcoming, let's say we're in May. How about June? Mr. Adam McQuaid, fully authenticated, hand signed. Absolutely. And July, we have the one and only.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. It's way up here, though. The signature's right there.
No way.
But you know the name. Sean Thornton, hand signed jersey. Giving these away. So like I said, it's only $1 per episode. We take half of that dollar, we pay the bills here at BNG, and take the other half to buy these incredible hand signed jerseys from Bruce Sullivan from Boston Sports and Music Memorabilia. So please get on board. We would certainly appreciate that. I don't think anything else has to be said, but we do want to remind people we are sponsored by FanDuel. Please go to FanDuel.com/Boston. And, there's a great deal going on. It's the No Sweat First Bet. You get up to $1,000. So get in on that at FanDuel.com/Boston. We appreciate FanDuel for their continued support and working with us as our title sponsor. And obviously, Action Electronics as well. Great people down in Walpole. That company is great for logistics and supply chain issues. You know, they're a mastermind at all that stuff. So please check them out as well. That's it, Grace. I think that is episode 330. And again, I want to appreciate your time today and wish all the mothers out there, including my mother, Kathy, a happy Mother's Day. And you know, this episode is dedicated to the ladies. So I appreciate you all, especially. I do want to mention that I've gotten a ton of feedback on our Grace here. So there have been people DMing me saying, what a great addition, smart, knowledgeable, talk very well. You know the sport. You've been around a while. So there's shout outs for you on your addition to this program. So I just wanted to mention that because it's been a real pleasure having you on and an extra person. And not only the female demographic that we're getting, but also an extra person that just knows hockey and flows really well with Steve and I.
Oh, amazing. Well, I love being here. So I love every chance I get to talk Bruins with y'all. So thank you so much to everybody for, listening and being there.
All right. With that being said, that is 3:30. You guys have a great Mother's Day and a great week. And we'll talk to you next weekend when Steve Forney comes back and we'll break down our personal rosters, what we think the roster should be or could be with additions or subtractions of players like Bergeron and Krejci. So please tune in next week. Thank you for the support, the downloads, the interaction, the Discord. Please hit that up in the show notes. We have a great community over there. We're going to be doing a lot of live stuff. We have a really, really intense off-season of content coming up to help everybody pass the time because it's going to be a long off-season. So let's do it together. But anyway, we'll talk next week. Take care, everybody. Thanks again for tuning in and supporting this week's episode of the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating and write a review on listening platforms such as Apple Podcasts and Spotify Podcasts. If you'd like to contact the show for advertising opportunities or to send us a question or topic idea we should be discussing, please send us an email to blackandgoldproductionsllc@gmail.com. Don't forget to share our program on your social media platforms with other hockey fans and follow our Twitter accounts at Black and Gold Pod, at BNG Productions, at Black and Gold 277, and at Kevin_O'Keefe89. Also, please don't forget to check out our official blackandgoldhockey.com website where we cover the Bruins organization from the NHL level down to the prospects worldwide. Peace out.